Opening words are by Richard S. Gilbert, excerpted. We bid you welcome who come with weary spirit seeking rest. We bid you welcome who come with hope in your heart. We bid you welcome who are seekers of a new faith. We bid you welcome who enter this hall as a homecoming, whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. It's by Martin Luther King, Jr. It's called The Network of Mutuality. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. We must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love. Before it is too late, we must narrow the gaping chasm between our proclamations of peace and our lowly deeds. One day we must come to see that peace is not merely a distant goal that we seek, but a means by which we arrive at that goal. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means. We shall hew out of the mountain of despair, a stone of hope.
My reading today consists of some excerpts of a long poem by Maya Angelou that she composed and read at the time when President Bill Clinton was being inaugurated. And a number of us remember the wonderful feelings of that poem and of the entire event. So I'd like to share those from Up on the Pulse of Morning. A rock, a river, a tree, host to species long since departed, any broad alarm of their hastening doom is lost in the gloom of dust and ages. But today the rock cries out to us, clearly, forcefully, come, you may stand on my back and face your distant destiny. Across the wall of the world, a river sings a beautiful song. It says, come, rest here by my side. Come, clad in peace, and I will sing the songs the Creator gave to me, when I and the tree and the rock were one. There is a true yearning to respond to the singing river and the wise rock. So say the Asian, the Hispanic, the Jew, the African, the Native American, the Sioux, the Catholic, the Muslim, the French, the Greek, the Irish, the rabbi, the priest, the sheep, the gay, the straight, the preacher, the privileged, the homeless, the teacher. They hear, they all hear the speaking of the tree. You, the Turk, the Arab, the Swede, the German, the Eskimo, the Scot, the Italian, the Hungarian, the Pole. You, the Ashanti, the Yoruba, the crew, bought, sold, stolen, arriving on a nightmare, praying for a dream. Here, root yourselves beside me. I am that tree planted by the river, which shall not be moved. I, the rock, I, the river, I, the tree, I am yours. Your passages have been paid. Lift up your eyes upon this day breaking for you. Give birth again to the dream. The humanity of heroism. Black History Month offers us opportunities to be in clear conversation about race relations, which can help us persons of European heritage combat our ignorance and face our own unearned privilege. It is my hope that continued attempts to learn and to take action will empower us all, regardless of our racial heritage, to make a difference for justice in the world. I believe that all of us benefit, and the world benefits, from focusing our minds and becoming fiercely intentional in our efforts to understand and celebrate diversity in all areas of life. And certainly the Unitarian Universalist Association supports that, growing our diversity. And celebrating our diversity can very naturally lead us to taking stands to promote and affirm the causes of justice. We can all be, as theologian and civil rights martyr Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, he wanted to be a drum major for justice. We can, all of us, be activists in some areas of our lives. Some of us get to activism through hands-on work in the community. Some of us get there through reading and talking with others about social justice. Through literature, we can gain glimpses into the activism of others that may provide models for our own. I have found guidance for my search in reading books by African American writers, some of them serious essays and some of them more fanciful. A book of fiction that offers helpful perspectives on race relations is by Ernest J. Gaines, G-A-I-N-E-S, titled A Gathering of Old Men. The book is easily available in paperback, and I highly recommend it to you. Gaines has written fine works since this one. The most recent one that I have read is titled A Lesson Before Dying, which I believe was a television movie. But he is perhaps best known for the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman, which was also made into a film, and I remember that Cecily Tyson was the protagonist. She was wonderful. Ernest Gaines has a subtle way with plot and theme, and he is a master at dialect. During this sermon, I will read to you various selections from the book, and I will try to read them to you as written. But some of it is in Cajun speech, and some of it in Cajun-esque. And I'd ask you to bear with me as this Midwesterner attempts the language of the bayou. Also, there are some racial slurs in the book that I will not say. Throughout, I found passages that reminded me so clearly of the words of Dr. King, who was and is a highly articulate spokesperson for the cause of racial justice. So from time to time in the context of the story, I will quote from some of his essays. Today's sermon is an attempt to weave together fiction and essay into a fabric of understanding and motivation to action. The setting of A Gathering of Old Men is the 1970s in the rural Louisiana parish of Marshall. And I swear to you, I did not have in mind that today is the Super Bowl and all the wishes and everything about New Orleans. That was not on my mind at all. The story opens after a murder has taken place outside the cottage owned by a black man named Mathew. Mathew literally holds the smoking gun and the body that lies there is that of Beau Bouton, a white man whom everyone knows for his tyrannical and cruel ways. Now, Candy is a young white woman who has lived all her life on the land and who manages it for her family. In an attempt to defend Matthew from what looks like a clear case of murder, she claims that she herself shot Beau after he threatened to shoot her, and indeed, Beau's shotgun lies next to him on the grass. The first theme that offers me some insight into race relations is that of paternalism in the form of Candy's desire to protect Matthew, even if it means risking her own well-being or, as is more likely, the well-being of the rest of the community. At first, Candy's idea of having everyone gather for support and her insistence that she was the culprit seems well-intentioned, but then some doubts creep in. And I'll quote from the book here. Candy is speaking, and her friend, the narrator, tries to get her attention. "I will not let Mapes or anyone harm my people." "Candy," I said. I reached out to take her arm, but she moved back out of my reach. "No, I won't let them harm my people," she said. "I will protect my people. My daddy and all them before it did, and I..." "Candy," I said. "I'll stand alone," she said. "Before I let them harm my people, I'll stand alone. I did it." Nobody in this parish will ever believe that. I don't care what people in this parish believe. What do I care about what people in this parish believe? I'll stand alone. Clearly, others question her paternalism too. Another character, Miss Merle, tells how she sees the situation. Quote, "I'll tell you what I'm talking about. You've got a crazy 30-year-old white gal down in the quarters claiming she just killed a white man. Now, I know she didn't, and Matthew did, but she's going to protect Matthew. She's going to protect him even if she has to get every other black person in this state involved. She's already got two old fools down there, Ruth and Johnny Paul, claiming they did it. But that's not enough for her. She wants more, 10, 15, 20, 1,000 more. She wants them to get 12-gauge shotguns, number 5 shells, fire the guns, keep the empty shells, so that when Mapes points his finger at Matthew, they can all say they did it." And, quote, "Mapes, the sheriff, is on target when he says of Candy, maybe Beau was living in the past and maybe he wasn't, but she damn sure is," he said. "She still thinks she can do as her pa and them did 50 years ago. Well, it's not going to work. Matthew isn't getting out of this." End quote. At the end of the book, when pride and self-esteem have been rekindled among the old men, Candy's protectionism is shown for what it is. The men want to convene inside Matthew's cottage to talk. From the book, "Y'all come on inside," Claytu said to us. "Not you, Candy." "Nobody's talking without me," Candy said, coming back toward the gharry, the porch. "This time we have to, Candy," Claytu said, "just the men." "Like hell," Candy said. "This is my place." "I know that, Candy," Claytu said, "but we don't want you here this time." That stopped her. Nobody talked to Candy like that, black or white, and especially not black. "What did you say?" she asked Claytu. "You know where you're at? You know who you're talking to? Get off of my place." "I'm not going anywhere, Candy. Not till this is cleared up. I already told the sheriff I don't mind going to jail or even dying today. And that means I ain't taking no orders, neither. End of quote. Mapes, the sheriff, puts in his 2 cents worth, too, and Candy turns on him. You've been trying to split us up all day, she said. And you want to keep them slaves for the rest of their lives, Mapes said back. Nobody is a slave here, Candy said. I'm protecting them just like I've always protected them, like my people have always protected them. Ask them. At least your people let them talk, Mapes said. Now you're trying to take that away from them. Dr. King was very familiar with this kind of paternalism. He wrote, quote, many white Americans of goodwill have never connected bigotry with economic exploitation. They have deplored prejudice, but tolerated or ignored economic injustice. But the Negro knows that these two evils have a malignant kinship. End quote. As the old black men gather at Matthew's house, Mapes, the sheriff, arrives. Mapes is an audience for the stories that the old men tell about their lives. However reluctant a listener, Mapes provides the foil for the theme of the book, identity, courage, and self-esteem are there in the lives of these old men who have known a lifetime of mostly rejection, prejudice, and pain. In telling their stories, the men discover courage that they didn't know they had, and they recognize that they have a cause. Their self-esteem and their cause come to them as they act their parts. From the book. Anybody got anything to say before we get started? Clay 2 asked. Anybody feel like turning around? It can get a little hot out there today. Anybody? Nobody said they wanted to turn around. All right, Clay 2 said. Let's get moving. Heads up, back straight. We going in like soldiers, not like tramps. All right. He started out first. Gun in one hand, shoebox of shells under his arm. Matt and Jacob followed, and then the rest of us. Jean-Pierre, Billy Washington, and Chimley was doing all they could to walk with their heads up and their backs straight. These last lines could have been taken directly from a speech by Dr. King. Dr. King writes, I think the greatest victory of this period was something internal. The real victory was what this period did to the psyche of the black man. The greatness of this period was that we armed ourselves with dignity and self-respect. The greatness of this period was that we straightened our backs up, and nobody can ride your back unless it is bent. End quote. As the old men think of themselves as straight-backed soldiers, they gain courage for the task. At first, Mapes uses the only weapons that he understands, and that is physical brutality. When the men whom he questions all admit that they each shot Beau Bouton, he loses patience and knocks them down, but without a word, the group adopts a spontaneous stance of nonviolent resistance that completely confuses Mapes. And this is the part that I find very difficult to go through. The deputy brings the local preacher, Reverend Jameson, to Mapes for questioning. From the book, he couldn't have chosen a sadder figure. His shirt was already fully wet with perspiration. He looked as if he were about to have a heart attack. He was that afraid of Mapes. What are you doing down here, Reverend? Mapes asked. Why aren't you at home reading your Bible? Reverend Jameson looked down at Mape's feet. He did not raise his eyes as high as Mape's chest. "I ain't got nothing to say, Sheriff," he said without raising his head. "I'll ask you one more time, Reverend," Mape said. "What are you doing down here?" The old man remained quiet. Beads of sweat covered his bald head. "Pow!" went Mape's hand across his face. Sweat flew from his bald head. Unlike the other two old men whose faces snapped to the side when Mapes hit them, Reverend Jameson staggered and fell flat on his back. The people looked at him, but no one said anything. He slowly pushed himself up and stood before Mapes again. "Well," Mapes said. He shook his head, which was still bowed. "I ain't got nothing to say, Sheriff." And down he went again. He sat up just as he had once before and stared down at the ground. Then, as he started pushing himself to his feet, suddenly, every last person in the yard and on the porch, whether he was sitting, squatting, or standing, began forming a line up to Mapes. Candy was at the head of the line. "I'm next, Mapes," she said. Mapes stared at her with those hard, ash-colored eyes, and his flushed jowls trembled even more violently. Then he jerked his head and walked away. What better illustration could there be of these words from Dr. King? Quote, "The nonviolent approach does not immediately change the heart of the oppressor. It first does something to the hearts and souls of those committed to it. It gives them new self-respect. It calls up resources of strength and courage that they did not know they had. Finally, it reaches the opponent and so stirs his conscience that reconciliation becomes a reality." End quote. In the book, there are many other stories of the black men who gather, who tell their memories, who regain confidence and dignity as they do so, and of the white people who are trying to understand this sudden change in attitude. As one of the townspeople says to Gil, the brother of the slain Beau Bouton, "Sometimes you've got to hurt something to help something grow. Got to hurt something to help something. Sometimes you have to plow one thing under in order for something else to grow." And I would take this opportunity to quote one of your former ministers as well, and that is the late Reverend Marjorie Bowen Sweetly, good friend of mine and yours. Marjorie says in her book, "Not by Ourselves Alone," "In most of our congregations that I have been part of or have worked with, structures that create and sustain whiteness are normative. There is presumption from some clergy and some laity that these canons, rooted in the European experience, are normative. These presumptions make it extremely difficult for culturally oppressed groups to find a place in our congregations. If I and other colleagues who are rooted in cultures outside Europe are to be nurtured in our movement, then I must keep the faith that things can be different. Being open to and supporting new possibilities in ministry, different cultural forms in worship, new ways of seeing, these too are important to keeping the faith, to nurturing the spirit. If you will stand with me in solidarity in an expanding circle of culture so that it includes all of us, you too will be keeping the faith." End quote. So for you today, my wish for you is that you will seek opportunities to educate yourselves about racism and race relations. I hope that you will discuss during this Black History Month racial issues with your friends and families and colleagues. I hope that you will take the steps toward activism by surrogate if necessary, but moving ever forward in courage to create justice in our world. As the Hebrew scriptures enjoin us, let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. So may it be.
And the closing words are from Martin Luther King. An individual has not started living until he can rise above the narrow confines of his individualistic concerns to the broader concerns of all humanity. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality. We must learn to live together as brothers. We may have all come on different ships, but we're in the same boat now.